What is up, everyone? Welcome to L2R2 PlayStation Podcast. My name's Fonzie. I'm joined by my co-host, Callum and Roe from across the pond. Callum and Roe, how you been?
Been good, yeah. It's actually freezing cold. It's like, it's just gone like winter overnight down here in England. So yeah, I'm trying to like keep wrapped up warm rather than like get the heating on. But yeah, other than that, all good, same old.
That's cool to hear. Yeah, I do the same thing where I just bundle up rather than pay the electric bill. It's like, yeah. If I can just, you know, walk around with five blankets, then I'll just do that.
Yeah, so it's really tempting as well because the radiator is right next to my bed. So if it's really cold, it's sort of quite nice having that on.
Right. Yeah, we moved into this new apartment. And for some, I don't know what kind of insulation they use, but it's always hot. And so it's still like, it's cold now over here as well. But it's like, we still have the AC going because it's just somehow no heat escapes. It's just like an oven in here, which that works in the wintertime as we transition to that. But like summertime, I'm not looking forward to none of this heat escaping. I don't know how it's going to work.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like it's always, a house is never good at both seasons. It's either good for the, when it's hot or when it's cold. But yeah, I normally find like it's the heat that is harder to escape from. It's harder to cool down than it is to warm up, I think. So yeah, I think sometimes that's one thing like you don't think about in summer is when you're sat inside just absolutely boiling hot. Although we don't get too many of those days in England, so don't worry about it.
I imagine. Yeah. Well, how's the week been going for you? What you've been playing or watching?
So I've been playing more Bioshock 2. So I finished Bioshock 2 this morning, actually, I think it was. I just started Minerva's Den, the DLC. So I think I'm gonna play through that before I go to Infinite. But other than that, I think it's just been Bioshock 2. I actually downloaded from PlayStation Now the Mafia Definitive Edition for some reason.
Okay.
I sort of have heard it, the first one that is quite good. So I've downloaded it and might jump into that. Not sure yet.
I did. That reminds me. I read, I think it was this week, the team that's behind Mafia 3. They were greenlit to do a new IP, and after 5 years of developing it, they just canceled it. And I don't have any details. It's just off the top of my head. I remember reading that, and just that reminded me. But I've never jumped into the Mafia series, but people do dig it. I like that, you know, different time setting that they have going, and there were those remasters recently too. I don't know if you jumped into those at all.
No, I think I played Mafia 2 before, I think on PS3 or 360, and I wasn't the biggest fan of it. And I think just because of the time it came out compared to the first one, it didn't quite get as much of a facelift. And I think it was a little bit broken as well, the Mafia 2 one. But I think because the first Mafia game was quite old, they really I don't know if it was from the ground up, but it definitely looks like it. So it definitely looks the best looking game out of the three now, I think. So, but yeah, I just saw it on PlayStation Now and thought, yeah, I might as well give it a download. I could jump into it and see if it sticks.
That's cool. Yeah, that's one series that I don't know if I'll ever get into, but it is cool. I know people dig it. So maybe there's just so many games that I already need to chip away at. But
yeah, that's the problem. Like, it's not a game that's even been on the horizon for me, really. So it's just come out of nowhere and it's going to be taking up space on my backlog.
Cam, speaking of Horizon segue, I've been playing Horizon 5 this weekend. I'm like fully on board. I ordered myself a cool little steering wheel. I can't wait for that to come in. I'm just like, nice. Just into it. And I've never really been a huge racing fan, but the way that the Horizon series has gone into like the arcadey side of stuff, I'm fully into it. And I was able to get, it's on Game Pass coming up this Tuesday, I want to say is the full release, but you can pay, it's like $40 to just unlock it early and have basically like pay for the full version of the game. And it's a little bit of a discount because you have Game Pass already. But I'm digging it. It's beautiful. It's nuts how great that game runs. I was watching some Digital Foundry breakdowns and seems to run great, like on old gen hardware too. Like they've really focused on, you know, unlocking it for like Series X and Series S, but still running steady and beautiful on the last gen hardware. It's nuts how great those games look and how fun they are. But yeah, I'm just like fully, so I'm the racing expert now. So if you have any questions on cars, let me know, because of all the time I spend modifying and painting my cars the same color. So you can send all your car questions to me.
I definitely do want to jump into it. I'll probably end up getting on PC. I'm hoping it all run okay. The other one ran really, really well and was pretty easy to play, it seems. So I'm hoping for the same. But yeah, it looks incredible. Really, really excited to jump into it.
Yeah, and this, it makes me think of the Gran Turismo series, where I would love, and we talked about it before, I'd love for them to do the same kind of offshoot where they have their dedicated racing sim, but then they do something that's more arcadey. Like, that just appeals to me. And it seems like they've had a lot of success with the Horizon series, reaching more people doing that by having this thing that's open world. People can jump in and it's not as like tedious or hardcore as those traditional racing sims, where you have to stay within the lines and tire pressure and all kinds of like super geeky stuff that I don't care about. It's like, I just want to race and crash into stuff and keep going. And that's what Horizon does. I'd love for Gran Turismo to do something like that, but I feel like they have no interest. Like, instead they're going like super hardcore in the other direction, which is cool. But I wonder if they'd have a lot of success branching off the same way Horizon and Forza have.
Yeah, it would be cool. I think, yeah, Horizon's definitely very spot. I always find like it's never quite as I find it like it's very like cringy, like I don't know what Horizon 5's like, but I think that's the one thing that kind of like makes it difficult sometimes for me to play. But you know, messing around and like just finding like different cars and tuning them up and everything is really, really fun. And yeah, they play super, super well as well. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see something on PlayStation, especially with the DualSense, sort of similar to Horizon.
You're spot on with the cringiness. I have that same vibe with it because I played a bunch of 4, especially last week, just getting amped for 5 coming up. And yeah, it's just because you live in this weird world where everyone's racing nonstop and that's all they have to worry about. And it's very like, just turn to 11 with this EDM festival that's constantly happening somehow, and people are just watching cars drive by as they're, you know, high on acid or whatever they're doing. But it's just, yeah, like a caricature of life. And they do that still with 5, but it's maybe a little bit more toned down, which I dig. But yeah, it's just kind of a little bit out there. But I wonder if they could, so it's Playground that handles the Horizon side. I feel like they could throw a story in there that could be cool, maybe going forward, maybe another offshoot, adding some weird story or linking up with like Fast and Furious or something, like taking that IP and just actually having a cool racing game on top of that with that story involved. There's just a lot of potential there. But yeah, with the current way of the way they integrate the humans into the driving, it's just kind of like, eh. And then also the way you customize your driver, it's cool, but it's a really limited. Like, I can't get a beard in my game for some reason, and there's like 10 people you can choose from. Yeah, it's really annoying.
No, I think I remember that in Horizon 4. Like, you didn't even get to like customize them. You just had to choose like an already made kind of model. Yeah, it is a bit odd. I think it's definitely, there's like a bit of a conflict between sort of some sort of aspects of it. But yeah, I think it's one of those things that's probably getting more and more focused on the sort of there's more come out, especially with like the community sort of stuff. But yeah, I haven't played like a huge amount of Horizon before, but you know what I have played, I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's, if you're into racing, man, it's really cool. Can't wait for my racing wheel to get in here. And I'm already looking at like different mods people are making on YouTube for that particular racing wheel.
In it and everything.
Yeah, or like modifying the tension on the pedals. It's like, okay, I need to get it here first, see what I think, and then start taking it apart instantly. But yeah, I'm super stoked for that. And I'm trying to think of what else. Really, it's just been Forza. And you know what I did? I remember last week you mentioned jumping into Red Dead 2, and it wasn't really your vibe. I bought it again on PC. It was like $30. It was half off on the Epic Store. And just to kind of see it running again on PC, and I've had the urge to jump back into it. And I love that game. It is very tedious with how they have you like run to your horse for a gun and the save points too, or like fast travel. It's very tedious, but it kind of, when I'm playing on a PC, the balance of seeing it and, you know, I'm 1440p and with everything turned on, it's crazy beautiful. And it's nuts how just awesome that game still looks now. Aside from like the tedious stuff, which is very annoying, but I'm having fun playing that too. It's such a different like juxtaposition from Forza driving super fast to, you know, Red Dead, where you have to tie your shoes in real time and like feed your horse an apple. Like, it's super slow, but yeah. I'm digging Red Dead 2 on PC.
Yeah, I think that that's probably the place where I'd likely enjoy it most, just because I didn't play too much of Red Dead. I got to like maybe like the second or third sort of gunfight in like the opening part, and it was just the general controls. Like, it felt very, it kind of felt like there was just a delay, like every time I sort of moved the right stick or anything, and it just felt really not nice to play at all. But I imagine with a mouse and keyboard, it's a bit more of like a raw input. So when you're like using your mouse, it's probably like it won't have any kind of like aim assist or weird sort of delays or acceleration. It will just be very raw, you know, input from a mouse. So that might be an alternative way for me to enjoy it, because it was just the, I just didn't find the gunplay fun at all. I found it like really, really hard to sort of stomach. So maybe playing it on PC would be a good shout.
Yeah, give it a shot. I would know about the mouse and keyboard because I hate mouse and keyboard. I'm just plugging in my controller into my PC every time. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, where maybe there's some freedom of controls that gets rid of that weird wonkiness. And they do have that. They definitely have that auto aim on console. Maybe you can turn that off.
You have to. Pretty sure you'd have to with just because of how like it almost feels like you're underwater. So sort of like you're trying to move, like even in first person, because I kept putting it in like the first person mode where it's just like an FPS, and that just like makes it even worse because it sort of just like really exaggerates how like rigid like the game feels. But yeah, maybe on PC it might just cut sort of through that and just feel like a normal game.
Yeah, the first person is interesting because they're almost there. Like, it's a really cool side or ability to play the game in that view. They did that with GTA 5 as well. But it's just a little floaty still and wonky. But I feel like they spend a little bit more time, maybe on the next one. I'm sure whatever property they go to again, they're going to have that first person option. And yeah, there's something there. But maybe if it was built from the ground up, but that's also something they never do. Their bread and butter is third person. But you're right. It looks cool. And then you start playing it and it's just kind of almost nauseating a little bit. And then I just go back to third person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might have just been I needed to play it for longer to kind of get used to how the, you know, the weapons feel and the gunplay feels. But yeah, I was just like, this is just not enjoyable at all. And I think I had another game. It was sort of like between that and I think maybe Bioshock 2 at the time that I was going to start playing. And I went for Red Dead, and because I sort of was thinking about playing Bioshock 2 anyway, it was kind of a pretty easy time to stop playing it. But then I guess if Bioshock 2 is similar, that's got that very floaty kind of gunplay that Bioshock 1 had. So I didn't really go from you know, to a much better experience. But yeah, maybe one day I'll get into it, because it does seem pretty, you know, incredible in lots of other ways.
It is cool. It's going to sink a lot of your time if you do finally jump in and that bug bites you, where it's just there's so much gameplay and the gameplay itself is so slow that you're going to be spending a ton of time in that world. But it is cool. I'm kind of glad that I'm on the other side of it, spending a bunch of time with that game. I'm finished. You know, I've experienced it and I don't have to play it again, I guess, unless I want to. But it was fun. It's just, yeah, it takes a bunch of time, especially that campaign like keeps going. And it's not really a negative, but at a certain point, you're kind of like looking at your watch, like, okay, so we're going to wrap this up. And then all the side stuff on top of that. But it is a great game.
Yeah. I don't actually think there's any game. And I think we've spoken quite a lot about how we feel about like long, like games that have really long like run times. But I think even like the best long games, like Persona 5 Royal, for example, that is going to take you 120 hours, like minimum, like that's just the content like length. And even like, I mean, that's a, you know, objectively like amazing game. But there's so many parts through there where you're like, oh, is this seriously like still going on? I think that pretty much like, I don't think I've run into a game that's sort of over maybe like, I don't know, 40, 50 hours where I haven't had that feeling. Maybe Ghost of Tsushima was one of the only ones in recent memory I can think of that I just felt relaxed all the way through it. But yeah, I think a lot of games of that length, you do sort of, especially Rockstar games. I mean, I think everyone's felt it in all, like, you know, every GTA game, there's always like a point where you're like, yeah, like I must be nearing some sort of end now. In fact, I even had it with Bioshock 2, which is probably what, like a 8 or 9 hour, well, probably longer than that actually, game. But it sort of felt like it was going to end before throwing you into like a whole other part. So maybe length isn't always necessarily to do with it, but there's definitely a way to kind of pace these games. And I think Rockstar games normally fall quite short there.
Yeah. And I think maybe people, you know, they want that. They know that when they're getting a Rockstar game, it's going to be, you know, 100 plus hours, tons of replayability. I get that. But as I get older, sometimes I'm not. Or if it's a game where I can jump back in whenever I want and there's still that length of time and I'm in the mood, say like something like a, I don't know, Call of Duty or Warzone, where it's always there. You can sink tons of time into it, but you can jump in and whenever you want. And it's kind of the same little chunk, little experience every time. I don't know. But yeah, I prefer shorter, tighter, some kind of experience where they say what they want to say, you're in there, and then it's over. Great. I'm more about that lately. But yeah, Calum, we can transition into some of the news here. Got some PlayStation news. This one is just good news for the UK. So Jumbo Jets airlifting PS5 stock into the UK in time for Christmas. This is Robert Anderson of IGN. PlayStation 5 consoles are being airlifted into the UK in time for Christmas, with three full Jumbo Jets arriving in the UK over the last 2 weeks and another two planned for later in November. PS5s have been increasingly short supply in the UK this year, but it seems Sony has started to take extra precautions to ensure more gamers can have access to the new console before the end of the year. According to the report by The Sun, Boeing 747 jets have been touching down in London, ready to ship the consoles across the UK. The 747 plane is rare after being decommissioned by British Airways, but carries a vast amount of cargo as a freighter aircraft, the report adds. Each plane can bring in 100 tons of equipment on almost 50 pallets. It means millions of gamers will now be smiling this Christmas. It's good news, Calum, for you guys over there. These jets are just airlifting or airdropping PS5s everywhere. People are scrambling for them. Good news. How do you feel about this?
It just shows how much of like a grip like games have on the world, like to sort of get these decommissioned planes out specifically to, well, I don't know if it is specifically just PS5s, but yeah, it's crazy how how much like a hold it has. But yeah, it's weird seeing The Sun cited as like a news source, because they are just, and normally if you see a citation from The Sun, it's going to be like a terrible, terrible thing, but gotcha. not in this case. But yeah, it's always scary seeing them as a as like a citation. They're awful.
I didn't realize. I get all my news from The Sun, so I guess I'm misinformed. Yeah. Are they like a tabloid kind of thing in the UK?
Yeah, they're like a, I mean, they were like a newspaper, and obviously now they've got like an online news platform as well. But yeah, they are just, you know, they're the kind of newspapers that will just like, they're just so heartless, like they'll just make headlines out of like anything at all. So they're constantly in hot water, and rightfully so. And it also pretty famously got the, I think it's like page 3 or page 4 has got like a topless girl on it every single day, and it's just what? Like yeah, it's a very awful paper.
Weird. Yeah, you're a newspaper dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's bad.
Strange.
You can really find out a lot about a person in the UK by what newspaper they read. Or if they read a newspaper at all, actually, that's normally enough.
Right. Or they exclusively read The Sun, yeah, somehow. Yeah, you mentioned the effect that gaming has on the scale with distribution. Yeah, they're not airlifting or airdropping food anywhere. It's just PS5s that are coming in.
Yeah, but that's more important, isn't it?
You know what? Yeah, at the end of the day, yes. But I have this little blurb here. We've talked, you know, in the past couple months since the PS5 launch, just how hard it was to get. Yet we're seeing now, you know, stuff starting to turn around, these jets that are coming in. But also the sales that PS5 has been doing has been pretty nuts. So Sony reported on October 28th, they have shipped and seemingly sold 13.4 million PS5 consoles to date. It's just under the PS4 over the same time period of time at 13.8 million units. So in the same time frame for the first roughly the year of PS4, they've sold just under 13.8 million at 13.4 million PS5s. So even with the pandemic, the chip shortages, they're somehow you know, getting these things out there and selling them. Yeah. So it's weird how it's two things at the same time, where it's nobody can get one, but also they're selling a ton of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I remember, because I'm not very good at remembering. I know that the PS4s were hard to get hold of as well, but I think that was just down to, they were just so sought after. But I remember I got I managed to get mine like before, and it like one of the first pre-orders, so I was able to like just live under a rock about all of that. So but yeah, it's definitely interesting that they seem to have manufactured pretty much the same amount in like the current climate.
Yeah, and they at some point modified the fan a little bit, where it's a little bit smaller. So they've done, it's been the news where they've modified whatever chipset as much as they could to kind of maybe get, you know, another PS5 or split into two PS5s out of the same hardware. I don't know, but they've able to make these adjustments to try and still keep up with demand. And yeah, good on them. They're selling a bunch. It's pretty successful. And I think they're riding the wave of the PS4, how successful the PS4 was, but still, you know, because PS5, I feel like just roughly reading the room, it's at the top of the demand. Although Xbox is still there, it's still like everyone's talking about PS5.
Yeah.
All right, Cam, we got the next one here. PlayStation has reportedly made a 5% investment in Devolver Digital. This is Tom Ivan of VideoGamesChronicle.com. Sony Interactive Entertainment is reportedly set to make a 5% investment in Devolver Digital. The PlayStation maker will acquire a minority stake in the US-based publisher, which today began floating on London Stock Exchange. GameIndustry.biz reports. Devolver Digital is now trading on AIM, a submarket of the London Stock Exchange, following a flotation that advised the company almost $1 billion. The European law firm advising Devolver, Field Fisher, confirmed it had received a significant strategy investment from the key industry player. Founded in 2009, the Austin, Texas-based company is publisher of many high-profile indie games, including Hotline Miami, Fall Guys, and more recently Death's Door. This is pretty big. I don't know exactly what this means, because there's a lot of these deals that happen all the time, say with like there was Remedy and Epic had bought a majority stake in them maybe about a year ago, 2 years ago, so that happens. But how do you feel about this? Does this mean we're getting, you know, only Devolver Digital games on PlayStation? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be lots of different things. It could be related to, I don't know, something in the pipelines there as well. But yeah, like you said, we see you know, these companies invest in each other quite often. So yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it's all about trying to make money, isn't it?
Right.
So it could just be that they see that Devolver Digital are doing well and they want to make some little side money or something. But yeah, you do see it every now and then.
Yeah, and they had that deal with Fall Guys where that premiered on, it was on PC and it was free on PlayStation Plus for a couple of months, where it launched there first and had a huge, you know, reception there. So they have a good relationship. And so maybe this also secures that relationship going forward. Does it mean, yeah, we're only getting Devolver Digital games on PlayStation? No, it's just, you're right. They make money off each other. They kind of scratch my back, scratch yours. Maybe there's a deal in the future where they also get something exclusive to PlayStation Plus. I don't know. But 5% of 1 billion, I can't do the math, but that's a lot of money. So yeah, they have a good relationship there and it's positive.
Yeah.
But I'm too dumb to understand what exactly is going on there. All right, we got our next one here. This one I'm also too dumb for. Returnal suspend feature can be turned into a full save. This is Joseph Noop of IGN. Returnal's recent 2.0 update finally gives players a method to suspend their game, turn off their PS5, and return to the suspend point to continue their run. The catch? That suspend point erases when you return. Now players have discovered an exploit that turns that suspend point into a full-blown save point, able to be reloaded again and again like the save scumming monsters we are. As described by Inverse writer Joseph Yaden and reported by Kotaku, the exploit requires you to suspend your save in-game, upload your save to PlayStation's cloud servers, and then when you die, download the save from the cloud. This will allow you to return to your suspend point as many times as you want, as long as it's in the cloud, since it can't be erased. Tedious choice, sure, but not nearly as tedious as restarting a run in Returnal. Callum, how do you feel about people figuring out another workaround to actually create a save in Returnal?
I do like a good save scum. I do enjoy those. But yeah, I imagine this is why they didn't want this to be an option in the first place, because this is just what people do. But yeah, it doesn't sound too tedious. I mean, obviously it's not ideal, but yeah, like it says, it's better than having to start all the way over again. And the good thing is, and something I always forget, is that it's much easier to navigate the menus on the PS5 because you don't have to close your game anymore, like when you're doing things. So I'm not sure if you have to like close the game, reopen it for it to read your save or whatever, but it should be at least easier than all the times we've saved scummed our way through games on PS3 and PS4, and even on like PS2 as well.
Right. Yeah, that's reading this. I guess I didn't realize that you could upload like a suspend moment in your PS5 as the save, because it's like it's not a save that the PlayStation Cloud recognizes. You're kind of uploading the save point of the game and then redownloading. I guess I didn't know that was possible. I thought it had to be kind of like agreed upon save points that are then uploaded to PlayStation Cloud and then you can download them. But that's dope. And I think it is, maybe it's tedious enough where people don't want it, they don't have to do it. And the people that do want this feature, which I would imagine a lot of us out there, it's there for you. I've yet to try this out, but I'm excited because this would be a game changer for me if I could just reset and, you know, restart from that save point.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I'd be interested in trying, but yeah, I'm not sure. Still not sure whether I'll go back to it, but that's definitely good to know that people have figured that out already. Yeah.
I wonder if with QA at Housemarque, if they anticipated people doing this and maybe didn't even try it as an option, but it's not that crazy of a feat. Like once they mention this is possible, I go, oh yeah, I guess you could do that. I wonder if
as soon as you suspend the game, it will create something for the PlayStation to read. So I guess you can just upload whatever that is to the cloud and then sort of, yeah, scum it by just leaving one of them in the clouds whilst the other one gets, you know, eaten up when you start the game again and then just re-download it. So yeah, it's nice. It's probably something they knew would happen, which might be why it was initially not a thing, but yeah, they probably just had to bite the bullet on that one.
Yeah, and I don't know if this means that, okay, we're going to, as Housemarque, we're going to implement like an actual save feature, because this is still kind of outside of their engine. It's just something that Sony or PlayStation can do in addition to what's going on in game. So I feel like for them to then add an actual full-blown save point, that requires more work. So I don't know if this means, okay, we open the door to the future where they implement an actual save point. I don't think that's possible, maybe, yeah. But it seems like it's just a workaround that they didn't anticipate.
Yeah, I guess as well, if they're worried about having a save feature ruining the experience, then at least if someone does this and then it ruins the experience for them, at least they're not really accountable for it, because they're using like a sort of a cheat to do it. So it kind of just like removes all accountability from them, but still allows people to play it in the way they want to.
Yeah, no, that's very true. All right, we got our next one here. Marvel's Avengers finally getting PlayStation exclusive Spider-Man hero event later this month. This is Chandler Wood of PlayStationLifestyle.net. We've known for more than a year that Spider-Man would eventually be coming to Marvel's Avengers exclusively for PlayStation players, and now the Web Slinger finally has a release date starting November 30th. PlayStation players can take part in the Spider-Man with Great Power hero event, which will let you experience Spider-Man's story through unlockable challenges woven through the Avengers initiative. At this point, there aren't any additional details about Spider-Man or how he'll play, or even images of what he looks like in the game, but Crystal Dynamics promises more reveals throughout the months via blogs, social posts, and live streams. There's a last little bit, because Square Enix was in the news regarding Avengers recently. All this comes shortly after Square Enix made comments alleging that Crystal Dynamics may not have been the right studio for the disappointing Marvel's Avengers, suggesting that Crystal Dynamics didn't have the right attributes and experience to tackle games as a service title. Square Enix doesn't, however, question its own decision to push for Marvel's Avengers to be a games as a service title, despite the near universal praise for the single player adventure that was Guardians of the Galaxy, which ironically also came from Square Enix. So we'll get the last part, but how do you feel about now? It's been a year of this promised PlayStation exclusive, you know, Spider-Man coming to Avengers. People were really bummed about it. Now it's coming, apparently. I know we've talked about Avengers before, not being super hot on it, but how do you feel about this news?
I'm just so excited for it. I'm joking. It's weird how long it's taken to happen, but yeah, I just really can't with this game. It's not even like it looks bad. It just looks so just nothing. Like it's just nothing to it. I wish it was like. I wish it did look like really, really awful, but it just looks so like cookie cutter. Just and you know, them saying that it was the wrong studio for, I think, like just this, you that game isn't, it would never work. It just would never work the way that they wanted it. So I think it was the wrong idea, not the wrong studio, because it's just, it just never, from the start, I don't think anybody really was very excited about it.
I know for me, it was the multiplayer aspect to it. Do you think if they would have focused on, say, how Guardians of the Galaxy focused on single player, do you think that would have been the key to success with that title?
Yeah, 100%. I think Guardians of the Galaxy has shown that, even though, what I said last week, where, I'm a bit scared about things like Marvel, saturating, starting to saturate, their own games and things like that. But there are really cool characters to tap into, and especially the ones that maybe don't fit as well on the big screen, or we haven't seen as much of. And I think Guardians of the Galaxy has just shown sort of that you have to build the game around what's good about those particular characters. So Guardians of the Galaxy is obviously the crazy worlds and the party, like the four really close characters and their relationships and everything. So I just, I think the whole games as a service thing is putting the characters and the actual game itself and the content to one side to try and sell a service, like a kind of game, before actually deciding on what the content's going to be. So it's just like the business comes first with that. And whereas Guardians of the Galaxy seems like an actual real passion project by the guys who made it.
I think you're right, where the business definitely came first with Avengers, and you could see it on the surface. And maybe that's what a lot of us had, where it just didn't seem right. And although I don't think that thing's going away, I think they're going back to the drawing board and figure out another way to continuously sell us stuff. They see the success of Fortnite, Apex, all the stuff where you can continue buying things. And you could argue that those other huge titles have done it in a better way, maybe, but they're going to go back to the drawing board and figure out, they're not seeing this as, oh, people didn't like it. Okay, cool. We'll go to single player. They're going to go, well, we're going to figure out another way to sell them something and trick them into that. But it's definitely not going away.
Yeah. And the good thing is, there's loads of games. So even if there are these games coming out under these, unethical pretenses and everything, we don't have to buy them because there's plenty of games elsewhere to fill our time.
Right. Exactly. So, Spider-Man coming to Avengers finally. I wonder, are we going to see, because now that this is exclusive to PlayStation, because Sony owns that Spider-Man, not the franchise itself, but like the character when he comes to movies, games, whatnot, they own him still. So are we going to get, is it safe to assume it's going to be that Marvel's Spider-Man from PlayStation in Avengers? Like that, or are they going to redo and have a different version of Spider-Man?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking that's probably the only thing I'm really interested in, is whether this is like a shared universe with the games. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be really interesting to see if it is their own version of Spider-Man, because I think that's a character that can have lots of different variants at the same time, I think, and not sort of have it suffer. So I think that's one interesting way to look at it, is just to see what they actually do with the character.
Yeah, we'll find out soon. If November 30th the thing is launching, then we have a month for them to build up the hype. I think they could kind of find some good graces if they bring Miles into play too, because he's such a huge character. That could be something that switches it up and makes it more interesting. If it's like Miles from Spider-Man as we know him in PlayStation. I'm wondering what he's going to look like, how he's going to play. I don't think there is a character that kind of game engine wise plays like Spider-Man in Avengers already. I could be wrong. But we're going to see. We're going to find out pretty soon here.
It'll be interesting to see. Like you said, just how, I guess, Sony tackle things like this going forwards as well.
Yeah, it's true, because their name is tied to it. And do they want, I guess not with Avengers, but with sending over Marvel or Spider-Man into Avengers. It's interesting. I'm hoping that they've nailed it before with Spider-Man, with Guardians of the Galaxy, it seems like. So follow that same mantra and you have success. It's just them trying to do this multiplayer games as a service thing. It's just, it doesn't seem to work.
Yeah.
Alrighty, Cam, we got our next one here. Sony's new patent could bring real-time image upscaling to PS5 and PSVR 2. This is Ali Jones of GamesRadar.com. A new patent filed by Sony Interactive Entertainment via Reset Era outlines a plan for a computer-implemented method for completing an image. Sony's new computer-implemented method involves generating a mask of the image, revealing some sections of it and hiding others, before altering it and applying filling processes based on the presence or absence of holes. The patent notes that the system could be used within a virtual reality device, noting that virtual reality headsets require much higher computing power to display a satisfactory image to a user than a conventional computer monitor. Cam, I'm bored with all this techno jargon as I read it. What does this mean as far as what's the potential with this tech in PS5 and PSVR 2?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I think the NVIDIA sort of tech that's been already out has had really good reviews and everything. And I think it's nice for, especially as we have like a real difference of resolutions at the moment. I think for the first time in a while, we've got like three resolutions that are used very commonly. There are 1080p, 1440, and 4K. So it's a nice bit of tech to fill those gaps for certain people. And I think with PS5 specifically, hopefully it means that maybe this is how they're going to enter the 1440p sort of foray by having 1080p scale to your 1440p monitor, or maybe even like a scaling thing going from 4K down to 1440p. But hopefully it also means we'll see some sort of support for 1440p resolution as well.
Yeah, true. I know I did read there was an update to Oculus 2 recently, and I want to say Oculus 1, where they were doing something similar where they're kind of filling in the gaps with frames to then equate to better performance because the actual system or hardware wasn't having to draw each frame from what I understand. So maybe something like that with PSVR 2, where they can get a bit more hardware or performance rather out of the hardware, maybe better battery life if this thing is wireless by having this AI component or software kind of guess what the next frame is and draw it. And you can do it like in between frames pretty accurately, apparently. But yeah, maybe something there. So it is already happening. You mentioned DLSS. It's a thing. So hopefully, yeah, this moves into the console realm. I don't see why it couldn't. And that could help with performance and scaling, as you mentioned, 1440p. So it's dope. It's a positive thing. I just don't know at all what the hell's going on as I read this.
And that's almost like a nice thing to just sort of let it be good and let us just sort of sit there and enjoy it without knowing too much of the details.
Yes, I agree. Let's go on to the next one here, Cal. We got Sony loses Vita trademark in the European Union. This is Andrew Kiwa of PlayStationLifestyle.net. An EU court has officially revoked the Vita trademark in the EU. Man, EU, saying that consistently is tough. EU. Allowing other companies to use the term for their products, Sony lost the trademark term due to non-use. The term Vita can now be used for data carrier devices containing programs, as well as images and or audio. The EU General Court revoked the trademark after Vita, spelled V-I-E-T-A, Vita Audio, applied to have it removed back in 2011. The company argued that the Vita trademark did not apply to data carriers containing programs, as the PS Vita was a handheld gaming device. Sony backed their trademark with evidence. In addition to the ability to play video games, the company claimed the PS Vita could also access the internet, as well as store images and audio. Unfortunately for Sony, the proof wasn't enough for the Board of Appeals. The General Court threw out the proof last month and decided to revoke the trademark. The revoked trademark is another nail in the coffin for handheld console, which received its last games this past summer. Earlier last month, Sony also removed the ability to use credit cards and PayPal on the PS3 and PS Vita stores. Production also for the handheld officially ended back in 2019. Callum, is this it for Vita? I mean, it seems like Sony has, at least they tried. I assume when I read this headline that they just let their trademark lapse on Vita, but I guess they did try to keep it. But how do you feel about them just getting rid of the Vita trademark?
Yeah, I think even if we were to get something handheld, they'd probably try and ditch the Vita name just because it'd almost be disrespectful to use it after how much they kind of let it die. So I think that's them just done with the name. Even if we do end up seeing something in the handheld sort of space, it sounds like it won't be called the Vita again.
Yeah, you kind of can't go, but if you are, like you mentioned, going back to handhelds at some point, you can't use a Vita because of how they handled the end of that life cycle where they just completely let it die, stop supporting it. You can't have that same level of trust with consumers to go Vita 2 and not have them go, oh, well, what'd you do with the last one? Like, we remembered that, how you just totally screwed up that, you know, the support for it. And it seems like Vita died so that PSVR could succeed. But yeah, you can't use that same name. You almost can't. Can they even go back to the handheld space and have people have confidence in them again?
Yeah, I don't. It'll be interesting to know whether they do go back. I'd like to see it because, I mean, I still love my Vita. And I mean, I think we've spoken briefly about depending what they do with VR now that we've kind of got the Oculus is kind of the new handheld thing. So maybe that's how they're going to kind of address that whole thing and, you know, try and fill that or try and compete in that space with Oculus. But yeah, I like handheld things. I like being able to lie in bed and play games.
Right. That's a cool thing. And yeah, I wonder if they decided that the writing on the wall was that there's no competing with Nintendo and they're just such a juggernaut. We're just going to leave that space. They would have done, you know, they're a huge corporation. So if there was money to be made, I imagine they would have stayed there, but because they saw the writing on the wall and decided, you know what, let's go to the VR space because, you know, there's less competition there. Oculus is still kind of at that point, just starting up. But I think I lost your video there for a second.
Yeah, I think something's not happy, but I think
although I can hear you, it's just showing a random part of your wall for some reason.
Okay. Well, enjoy.
Yeah, this like pixelated portion of the wall.
We just do that and then.
Okay.
And then do that.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. That works. But yeah, I guess closing remarks on the Vita. What do you think? It's pretty much dead, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's gone. It's been gone for a while, but I'm actually going to be charging it up soon because I need to play the second Metal Gear Solid game, which I have on there. So yeah, I need to do that and try and remember how I find all my games to download.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if it's just a mess trying to, you can look at the games that you have purchased. I know you can re-download them, but I just forget how you do that. And I haven't had a Vita in years.
Yeah, they kind of have that like hybrid PlayStation 3 kind of interface, which was always, I remember, very difficult to access your downloads and like all your like previous account stuff. We definitely take for granted how easy it is to you know download games now.
Right. All right, Callum, that's it for the news. I did want to end this show on just kind of recapping the PS5. So we've reached the birthday of the PS5, November 12th in the States is when it launched. I want to say it was a week later, possibly in the UK, if I remember correctly. But it's been a year now, roughly, for the PS5. Just giving some overall thoughts on this first year. So I did have some details pulled up, exclusive launch titles, some games that got their PS5 upgrades, the features. Before we go into the detail, how do you feel? It's a year now having your PS5. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's the jump's definitely been lesser than other consoles probably, but I think we always sort of expected that. I mean, I've definitely played things that are next gen, and it's been nice being able to play, you know, games in 4K for the first time because I've never done it with my PC. So it's nice to be able to, you know, pretty seamlessly play games at 4K and high frame rates and ray tracing. So I think that's the main thing to take from it is it lets you comfortably play games at very, very, you know, high fidelity, which I think is always like the nice thing about a new console, but you normally also have like the insane like jump that also sort of surrounds that as well, which I don't think we've had as much this time, but you know, I still really enjoy having the console, and I'm really excited to see what, you know, what we can do with it.
Yeah, you mentioned something interesting where I think these jumps that we've been used to in the past whatever 20 years of going from console generation to generation where you have these huge bumps of graphics and what you can do. I think it's kind of the hairs are now, we're splitting hairs now as we move forward, where it's just not these crazy iterations, but it's still an improvement. And I wonder if stuff that's been in the middle, like the PS4 Pro and Xbox has their equivalent, where that kind of, you have these marginal upgrades along the years, and then you have your next full-blown release. And then a lot of games now are cross-platform or cross-gen as well. where it's, we're not seeing that as much, but it's still, you know, great to have these features. Like you mentioned, 4K, a lot of the games now standard will support 60 frames per second and have different modes you can choose from. So it's been, you know, definitely an upgrade, but gone are the days of like going from, you know, these pixelated forms to then crazy smooth characters. It's like, it's all good now. It's just like small iterations.
Yeah, definitely.
Now let's recap some of the titles we've had in this first year. So we had some of the launch games, Astro's Playroom, which was, you know, dope, amazing. Demon's Souls. We had eventually Destruction All-Stars, Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart, Returnal, and Deathloop. So I'm focusing on solely the PS5, like only titles that we've had this year. I guess Ratchet & Clank, well, that one is also just PS5. But how do you feel about the first year of exclusive PS5 non-cross-gen games?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty good. I haven't played Demon's Souls and Ratchet & Clank, which are probably arguably the most next-gen games on there. But, you know, I played Returnal and Deathloop, which were both good, you know, good fun games. Both games that were very different as well. They weren't like the general, you know, cut of the cloth, you know, kind of experiences, which is nice to see. And Astro's Playroom was absolutely awesome. It was such a nice introduction to the console and what it's capable of as well.
Yeah, and I wonder if, did we see a juggernaut release this year? Like, I think we focus on the PS4's life cycle of God of War, Last of Us, or Last of Us 2. Did we see that this year? Do you think there was this crazy experience you had to get for PS5 only this year?
I think, and it's going to sound really weird because I haven't played it yet, but just from looking at it, I think Ratchet & Clank could be that. I mean, I haven't played it, and I will admit, you know, it did seem to kind of drop off quite quickly after it came out. Not that I think it's going to be bad or anything, but I would say Ratchet & Clank has the pedigree to be like a standout console seller, but you know, I can't say for sure.
I think you are right on that, where I didn't finish Ratchet & Clank. I will go back to it, but that is the best example of what can be done on PS5, where it's this crazy quality of graphics of 4K and the amount of stuff that's going on and still renders fine and runs smooth. Then you have on top of that the crazy fast loading with SSD. It's the best example of what can be possible. Maybe even close to that, and it's weird, but is Astro's Playroom, just showing off the power of the DualSense. But then you have also Demon's Souls was, you know, another 4K juggernaut looking game. But I would agree with you on that, where at least for this year, Ratchet & Clank kind of showed what is possible with PS5 and how, well, at least with the beginning, because it's only going to get better, I imagine, from there on. But that was if you had to play a game on PS5, maybe that was the one, Ratchet & Clank.
Yeah, and it's a huge series. I mean, I think it's easy to forget, mostly because I think the games in the PS4 era, like before the Ratchet & Clank remake, there was kind of like a time where they were kind of dying down. They were experimenting a little bit and people weren't massively happy. But, you know, there's no doubt that the series is huge and the production value is always insane. And, you know, the people behind those games are amazing. And so I think, yeah, it's definitely had a bit of a resurgence. But if you look back at just how big the series is and how long it's been around for, with like, it's worth bearing in mind as well, like it's been around for this long with the same, not necessarily the same people, but the same studio, which is quite rare to see.
Yeah, for sure. So moving down, we have to focus on some of the PS5 upgrades we got, or cross-platform, cross-gen games, rather. So we had Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade, which was only on PS5. And now I'm crossing my wires. Did that come out to PS4, or was that only PS5?
It was only PS5, so the DLC included, only PS5.
Gotcha. So that would have been in my first group there. Whoopsie on that. So we got Spider-Man Remastered. That was the upgrade version of Spider-Man on PS4. Also, Miles Morales got a PS5 edition. We had Death Stranding Director's Cut. Ghost of Tsushima had a PS5 upgrade as of God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, Last of Us 2, Days Gone, and Sackboy also had a PS5 launch with PS4. I guess out of that list, the ones that had their PS5 upgrade, how do you feel about them supporting these games? Did that kind of fill in some of the gap this year?
Yeah, and I think they've been great examples of what the PlayStation 5 could do. I mean, Final Fantasy VII DLC wasn't the best, but the gameplay, the visuals were just unbelievable. Really, you know, looked like truly next gen. Probably one of the best looking games I played this year. Same with, you know, Miles Morales looked really good. Again, I think we spoke before, I have problems with some of the actual gameplay, but visually it you know, ran amazing and the ray tracing was great. And same with, I haven't played the Ghost of Tsushima upgrade or the DLC, which I think is exclusive to PS5. Is that cross-gen?
Another one. I'm not exactly sure. I lean towards on PS5 for the DLC stuff.
But that looks, you know, amazing as well. And hopefully one day I'll get around to that. But yeah, I think these have all been really good. They definitely filled some sort of gap, and they all seem to, especially like God of War and Days Gone, they're games that I think a lot of people wanted to go back to at some point anyway. So it was a really good reason to do that, especially Days Gone, which, you know, had heaps of problems on PS4 in terms of how it ran and everything. So to get that at like 4K 60 FPS, just, it was a really nice way to move over to the next gen, just to sort of see how easily these games can now play on your new console as well.
And I love the idea of, for the first year, really trying to flush out what were the best experience on PS4. Let's, if we're not doing a full-blown upgrade to PS5, at least like doing the 60 frames thing, adding other modes to it, doing that to fill in this entire year of in between these bigger releases to just give people another reason to adopt a PS5 this first year. And then I'm assuming going forward, we have kind of the huge experiences on PS4. They've had some TLC, some love on PS5. And year two, we kind of focus on those PS5 only experiences. There's still going to be cross-gen games. We'll get into that, like Horizon, God of War still has, and Gran Turismo 7 has a PS4 version. But as far as bringing back these games that already have released on PS5, I feel like they've done a good job and have fully fleshed it out, where I think going forward, it's maybe not going to be such a thing going forward. But I'm fine with that. I do like that they spent this year doing that, giving everyone, you know, more stuff to play this year.
Yeah, and also you do have to factor in COVID and how disruptive that must have been. And you know, if we all want new tech next-gen games, then they can only obviously start being done when the tech's there. So we're only going to see more and more come. And, you know, we always say there's so many games that I want to play. So the less that comes out for the time being, or the more spaced out it is, the better for me, definitely.
Yeah, same. So let's see, going forward, as far as some of the features of the PS5, so post-launch, we eventually received console updates. These enabled 3D audio for headphones and for TVs. We had at least one or two UI tweaks along the way for the PS5, and then eventually the SSD upgrade support. With the 3D audio, that was one big tagline, you know, moving to PS5. Did you experience that? Did you feel that was, you know, anything revolutionary for the PS5?
I mean, it sounds on paper like it is. I don't know enough about it to know how good it actually is. I've tried it and didn't see that much of a difference, but I don't know if that's just me not being much of like an audiophile. But yeah, it's a cool idea for sure. And I think 3D audio is probably something that's going to, or that kind of, you know, idea is probably, we'll probably see more and more of it as, you know, we keep going forwards into like 4K and 8K and all these super fast SSDs and things like that.
Yeah, that one I did try for about 5 minutes. It ended up using the TV from or the audio from my TV, rather than, I have a sound bar and like some speakers up to it, and it sounds really good. So, but using the 3D audio diverted from that and just use the speakers on the TV. And I get that they're using tech and software to, you know, replicate a 3D sound, but it ended up not sounding better than my standard setup. So I just ended up going to that. I didn't try the headphones, but I still don't know how they can, with software, do anything better than what is possible already on just like your standard headphones without some kind of actual hardware that's in the system. But there is that happened. 3D audio is a thing. The SSD, that was a big deal for them to allow third party, you know, SSDs to be thrown in there. And we had to wait for it. There was drama with, once they released it, having the list of compatible PS5s. And there was even more drama on like, how do you install it? Which I thought was kind of silly. Once we saw breakdowns of like, it's just one panel you take off and pop your thing in there, you're good. It's not this whole surgery thing that needs to happen. But how do you feel about the the route they took with SSD upgrades versus Microsoft with Xbox?
I actually quite like it because you've got your storage is all on board, so whatever you buy is additional storage. It's not, you're not replacing what's already there, which is obviously what it normally is. You know, you take out what you've currently got and then you replace it with a drive. So that means you normally have to buy, like, you know, a huge drive and then hope maybe you can sell your old one or something like that. Whereas this means, you know, you can get, you can buy like an extra 400 gig and that will give you what, like, nearly like 1.5 terabytes or whatever. So I quite like that angle. It's all very new tech, so I personally wouldn't actually buy into it yet, just because I imagine they'll probably stabilize, you know, as the years go on, not the hardware itself. But yeah, I think it's always exciting when something comes out and you can't actually buy, you know, the thing for it yet, because it just shows how cutting edge and new it is. Or I mean, maybe that's the more optimistic way to look at it. But yeah, I like it. I think it's exciting to be able to put these super fast brand new SSDs into a games console. I think that's it's kind of like blurring the line very slightly between PCs and consoles as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if, I think a lot of people have that same desire where they just like the option to kind of tweak their console and upgrade it if they want to. It's that option's there. I think a lot of people do enjoy the option of, yeah, spending money and upgrading something. And it tends to, that sides with PC players where that's what they do. They're constantly like swapping out parts and upgrading and able to do that in chunks rather than full blown buy a new setup. So I think console players do like that. They're starting to experience that. The only hurdle right now is that if you want to upgrade, at least with the hard drive, it's crazy expensive. That's really the only limit there. But I think you're right, where over time, the stuff is going to get cheaper. At least the speeds that we're seeing with these compatible SSDs, they're, because they're so fast and so new, they're crazy expensive. But as that gets cheaper, I think more people are going to jump in there. I'm fine with the internal storage as it is, you know, just managing that. They did, I forgot to throw it in there, but they had that option eventually of putting your PS5 games on an external hard drive and then just swapping them back and forth. I think that helps out a lot with conserving hard drive space. But overall, I'm happy with the route they took. And at least with third-party support, you have way more options of these prices going down compared to possibly with Xbox and their deal with, I want to say it's Seagate, they're kind of stuck with that partnership. And so it depends on those products going down if they do in price over time. But with third-party, you know, you can support all kinds of different manufacturers and more higher potential for cheaper SSDs. But I am a fan of that route. So some other features here, the DualSense itself, how do you feel about this? Because that was a big upgrade from the DualShock 4 to the DualSense. How do you feel about this a year later?
Yeah, I think the good control is, you know, it's nice to have that additional kind of bit of immersion in some ways. But I think overall, I probably prefer the DualShock 4. I still use that, you know, for my PC or if I'm using, you know, something with a controller that is on my PS5. Just because I think it just fits in my hand a bit better and it seems to hold charge maybe slightly better as well. But yeah, the DualSense is definitely a great controller and I'm sure it'll get iterated on as well. We'll get sort of like new SKUs and new models released just like the DualShock 4 did.
Yeah, and the big takeaway when Sony was promoting the DualSense itself as this new upgrade, the rumble feature or the haptic feedback was a big deal. I am impressed with that. I think that's been a great upgrade from the DualShock, but the triggers, the triggers that will can stop and create tension on their own, those I've been less excited for. Seeing the games that have implemented them with maybe my favorite has been not Sackboy, I'm looking at something else, Astro's Playroom. The way they use all the DualSense features I love, but that's been the only game that, at least with the triggers, has been, you know, worthwhile to me or interesting enough. I did play Returnal. They had that feature where apparently your gun would lock and you'd feel a different tension on your trigger. That one just kind of passed me by. Just it wasn't anything revolutionary. But as far as the haptic feedback and Returnal was a great example of like the raindrops on your controller, you kind of feel like different vibration points. That was really dope. But how do you feel about the vibration and the haptic feedback and the triggers?
Yeah, I think that the vibration haptic feedback is definitely a nice addition, and I'm really interested to see how it will work in driving racing games as well, especially the triggers. I agree with you. I don't think the triggers have been used quite that well. I mean, like Resident Evil Village is a good example where you know that they were being used like for something, and same with Deathloop, but it just didn't really translate across maybe as well as it could have. But I think Astro's Playroom has proven that it can work, you know, pretty much perfectly. It just maybe is that Astro's Playroom was done much better than these other games, but it at least shows that the controller has the potential to, you know, be really good. It's not necessarily that these games are doing all they can to make it perfect. It's just maybe that we just need more time to figure out how to get it, you know, as good as it was in Astro's Playroom.
Yeah, I think the key thing is time, giving the devs, letting them find these ideas that would work exclusively for the DualSense and using that to their advantage. I think it's just time that we're going to see that going forward, which I'm pretty excited for. The last topic, Calum, to wrap up the PS5 first year, I'm going to swing it over to you. Do you think as a PlayStation fan, you needed to adopt the PS5 this first year with some of the games having the PS4 support as well, say with like Spider-Man? How do you feel about needing to adopt the PS5 if you're a PlayStation fan?
I don't know about needing to, but I think the PS4 definitely feels like it's done when you're using it. I mean, it has for a couple of years, I think, where it's painful to navigate certain areas of the dashboard. Games are obviously starting to run poorly, like Days Gone and, you know, all these other games that just couldn't quite they couldn't quite get too much juice out of them. We're seeing it, you know, you mentioned Forza Horizon with Xbox One as well. I know that it looks good, but you can definitely see, you know, like the side-by-side photos, how much is drawn back from them as well. So I don't think it's like massively necessary, but I think for the price, like getting like a digital PS5 for £369 is, and all the Xbox Series S for like £250 or whatever, but in terms of the PS5, I think just for the price and for the sort of luxury of how easy it is to access your entire collection of PS4 games, how much quicker it is, how the games run better, I think it's, you know, a no-brainer to try and get your hands on one if you can, for sure. I mean, I know everyone's in different situations, but yeah, I think if you can get one, it's not worth waiting, just because having one to replace your PS4 is, you know, a good enough experience for me.
Yeah, and it depends on just your interest and what you find, essential with PS4. You could have gone this whole year just having your PS4. I imagine a lot of people did because they couldn't physically get a PS5. But even if you just chose not to buy a PS5 this first year, you could have still played a lot of the same games on PS4 and still had, you know, a fine experience. It's just a matter of, is it a priority to you to adopt this new tech when it comes into play? So everyone's different, but for me, I'm such a nerd and had the money, I had to jump in on that PS5 and I'm happy for it. Like it's, the games run better. There's those PS5 upgrades that we got on PS4 upgrades we got on PS5. They made it worthwhile, and I jumped into games I haven't played in years. And so it was just a no-brainer for me, but I'm super happy this entire year. The only part that I feel slightly bummed about is how they handled this holiday as we end at this first year of PS5. There is no exclusive, you know, juggernaut. I understand everything. Ideally, they would have wanted to have, you know, say, I think Horizon was kind of the goal to have this holiday. And maybe even, not Deathloop, but Ghostwire Tokyo. But everything got pushed because of COVID into 2022. I get that. So because of that, there isn't any huge PS5 exclusive this holiday season. And what they've done is allowed room for Xbox to come into play and say, hey, we have Horizon, we have Halo Infinite, which are going to be huge. But as far as this holiday, nothing that says like, hey, I need to get a PS5 for these exclusive titles. So that's my only disappointment, but I understand it. That's just how the world is right now. It's like they would have had that presence this holiday if they could. All righty, Calum, we'll end it there for the week and for the PS5's first year. Where can they find you online?
I lurk on Twitter at Bear Monroe sometimes.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter as well at Plastic Art Pod. That's it for us this week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.